Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to The Ruck on a morning of mourning for English rugby. Sorry, I didn't script that. I just made that up. A morning of mourning for English rugby when they're left in the position of having to beat Ireland on Saturday to finish fifth in the table, I think, which is not exactly how it's supposed to turn out. We've got a great panel to go through all the myriad issues on the weekend. First of all, the man we see as the uncle of the podcast and indeed of journalism, broadcasting and fly half play. It is difficult not to rise to our feet when he enters the studio. And he's come all the way to us today from the seventh floor, is it?
Yes, seventh.
From the seventh brackets executive floor. He was carried in by sweating slaves on a sedan chair. And he's joined us today, Michael Liner. Michael, we were just talking before we came on. Your family, Lewis and Tom, your sons, they face the biggest tug of war for their talents in the history of rugby, because I think I'm right in saying that they will all be available or eligible for England, Italy and Australia. And the way England are playing, I think you can put the red rose on now. But how's that going to happen? How's that going to work out in the family lounge when you have the conversation? If, as I'm sure you will.
Yeah, I've also got a third one, Nicholas. Look, they're in a good place at the moment. We live here in London, and you know, the academy setups and the school setups they're in. I actually do believe that for a young kid, there's not too many better places in the world for them to be learning than learning a bit of rugby. And so they're enjoying it. That's the main thing for me. And if they have to make that decision later on, it'll be up to them.
Right, Michael's clearly been got at by Eddie Jones already. Steve James, the renowned Times cricket and rugby writer, not long returned, Steve, from a big tour of Australia and New Zealand. Yeah. I'm rather surprised you're back, because whenever I'm in New Zealand, I always attempted to ask for naturalisation. And not come back, but just
yeah, I saw a few people out there who mentioned you. You're still very popular out there.
Giving my best, yeah. but a great trip.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, 6 weeks, a little bit long. Probably only, I only saw 11 days cricket, I think, in 6 weeks, which is not great. Yeah, the one day series against Australia was good. We beat them 4-1, but the T20 not quite as good.
So. But you're not really in your career associated with a fusillade of sixes, but rather more the classical way of batting. But are you coming round to the one day game a little bit now, because it does have its talents and its uses, doesn't it?
Yeah, the one day international game I really like. As I say, that series was good, wasn't it? And they've just had a very good series against New Zealand.
Yeah.
T20 at international level, I'm still not sure about. Trevor Bayliss, the England coach, mentioned that, didn't he?
Yeah.
He thought that he probably shouldn't have played it at international level. I think it's more a domestic thing.
Thank you, Steve James. Our third panellist has actually made more effort than anyone to be here. Last week, she put to bed an edition of Rugby World, of which she's editor. She then whizzed to Paris. She was working long into the early hours because she sat next to me in the press room and was huffy with us whenever we were joking. She wanted to get her work done. At 1:30 a.m. in a pub in the Gare du Nord, she refereed a verbal boxing bout between myself and Stuart Barnes. She got up at dawn next...
That would have been very exciting.
I won. The ref had to stop it. Next day, she was up at dawn for a train from Paris to London. Then straight on to Cardiff for the match and a command appearance on the Scrum 5 programme. At the moment, she's sure and fresh as a daisy. Sarah Motford, congratulations on being here. Well done. Well done. Well,
it's my, obviously my greatest ever achievement.
Steady on. Don't, we haven't asked you a question yet. Don't go too early. Saturday, as everybody knows, especially if you live next to an Irishman, the Grand Slam match for Ireland at Twickenham. And the first time they've ever gone there with Twickenham with the Grand Slam at stake. I'm full of useless facts like that. They overcame Scotland on the weekend by with a bit to spare. England, as we all know, have to fight to avoid fifth place. Michael, strange times, really, but what you've seen of Ireland, it looks to me like they deserve to be up there.
I think so. I think they've got a very good all-round game. I like how, even though, despite the fact that they've had quite a few injuries and that sort of thing, they seem to be able to bring in young guys to replace the ones that are there, and it all just seems to work pretty well. And from what I understand, that's something that Schmidt and David Nusafora, who's been involved as well, have really planned for. You know, they've got a number of people that are all au fait with the systems and how it all works, and they can just fit in very well. And it's they're a very good all-round team. They've got a lot of experience in various different positions, but then this young enthusiasm and some real tough nuts up the front as well, which, of course, you need in international rugby. And I've just been very impressed with them throughout the Six Nations. And, you know, we look back to the, I think the turning point of the Six Nations was when Ireland need to win in France, right on the death there. And they were a team that's a sign of a remarkable team. And I think what Johnny Sexton did that day, not only the drop goal at the end, but the two kicks previous to that, the 22 and then the cross kick, though, all of that needed to be precise. And the team just backed him up really well. I just think they're a very good side with a lot of depth and know what they're doing.
They've brought players through as well in this championship. Mm. And Wales and Scotland have done the same. That's one of my big worries with England. I mean, who have they really brought through? I mean, we've seen a bit of Sam Simmons, but I'm not sure he's a number eight at this level. He might have to try him on the flank. You know, some of the guys coming off the bench, they're all old guys we've seen before.
Absolutely.
They haven't moved forward, have they?
I totally agree. I think the other teams have reacted to their big injury absence by, okay, well, they're out, tough. Yeah. In you come. Yeah. Sam Simmons, with great respect, may become a great forward. He's not a big man. He tried to carry the ball twice in Paris. He was literally picked up and thrown backwards.
He's not a number eight.
Odd selection. Yeah. Sarah, just talking about Ireland, when you follow England, it's always a little bit confusing. They play as if confused. You get mixed messages in every press conference. With Ireland, Joe Schmidt doesn't give press conferences because he didn't want to talk to anyone, which is one benefit for clarity. But they seem to know what they're doing and they seem to be united. Wasn't there a huge contrast between the way that England played and the way that we'd just seen before Ireland play against Scotland?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the two performances against France, I don't think England would have got a quarter of the phases together that Ireland did, those 41 phases to set up the Sexton drop goal. I don't think England would have got... Did they get any phase play beyond double figures on Saturday night? I don't think so. They're really clinical, and they can mix it up as well. So Stockdale on the wing just can't stop scoring, but also they've got the forwards who can drive it up from the tight, close to the goal line. I mean, how many scrum halves would you see score the try that Conor Murray scored at the weekend? Mm. You know, just that brute force. And I think you're right, the players they've brought through. James Ryan, I think everyone thinks he's going to come through and be their major force in the second row. We know about Furlong. Andrew Porter's done a job at tight head when he's needed to. Mm. They've lost two outside centres in this championship, and they got a third one in on Saturday, Gary Ringrose, who again was superb. So they're just building depth across. My only concern still with them is halfback. Yes, Joey Carberry's looking decent as a backup to Sexton, but who is the backup to Murray at scrum half? He's really going to come through. And if we saw at the last World Cup how injuries did hurt them in that area.
They've moved their game on as well, haven't they? I mean, since Smith's early days, I mean, they were very limited, weren't they? They basically kicked everything, didn't they, at the start? So, I mean, you can see that progression.
And bit of skill from Gary Ringrose, Steve,
brilliant player.
He should have gone on the Lions tour.
God, that's 420 people sugar on the Lions. They didn't do too badly with the ones they took. Mike, it's all become very interesting for people back in Australia, I suppose, with Eddie. We're not used to, at least I'm not used to, the continual changes in stress and emphasis. You know, yesterday he said, "Oh, the English public, we almost got to give them him 18 months." Well, that is a complete denial of everything that international rugby we know is about. He complained last week because he only had the England team for 13 weeks a year. 13 weeks, one day in every four. I mean, as I wrote in the paper, I could become a ballet dancer. You could teach me to become a ballet dancer in 13
minutes. Can you do that? Can that be your challenge?
I said on, but
I feel a reality TV show coming on.
That'd drive the hits up on thetimes.co.uk.
All right, look, you're supposed to be tired. Michael, I'm finding it very odd. Are there any surprises in the way that Eddie's leading the charge here? Because it's confusing a lot of people.
Yeah, I'm sitting in the same boat as everyone else. I'm reading the papers and reading the press and listening and watching the games, etc. And yeah, you're right. There was one moment after the Scottish match there where it was said that, you know, we can fix the breakdown in a week or so, and it's an easy fix. And now we've got to be being told that it's 18 months, and there's a lot of blame going around. But gee, I don't know. You know, I thought that England about a few weeks ago just out of form. They're a team out of form. But I think it's a little bit more in depth than that now. They've seemed to, as you rightly wrote a few weeks ago, that seem to have plateaued. And, you know, there's some really big decisions to be made now. I mean, he's almost backed himself into a corner a little bit, whether he sticks with some of the tried and tested. Have they plateaued and that's it? 18 months out from a World Cup, does England need to look forward to that? I think they're decisions that have to be made.
Steve, it's quite important that he does it soon.
I actually think it's a bit of a shot to nothing this game on Saturday for Eddie Jones. I don't think a lot of people expect them to win there. So I think he might be able to make some of the selections that he probably hasn't been brave enough to make before.
Yeah, but he's seen as a bold coach, but I've never seen that in his coach or selection. But are you saying that it's all on all or nothing, so he can really make six changes or what?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I mean, as I said before, I'd give Simmons a go at seven. I think Robson's got to go back at six. I might play Haskell at eight. I thought Haskell and Sinclair made a big difference when they came on.
There's another one, Sinclair.
I mean, there was... Yeah,
give Sinclair a go.
Last, there was some go forward. I mean, that's been the big problem with England, isn't it, in this campaign, I think. They missed Biddy Vinopola,
like crazy.
Like nobody can say how much they have.
Just before we ask Sarah for a couple of people she'd bring in, then let's just deal with the Robshaw question.
Yeah.
To me, for a man to be called industrious in an international rugby match is the absolute minimum. How can you be not industrious? You're playing for your country. Industrious is not enough. He has no... And someone said to me the other day, my colleague Nick Kane, he said, do you know what? In the modern era, in the modern game, you can really look busy and be doing nothing. And actually, that is what Robshaw is at the moment. Yeah. He's making no forward impact for England whatsoever. And there are a number of others as well. Sarah, who would you bring in? Steve is saying he's almost got open field to change the team.
Well, he's got to make changes in the back row because Laws and Hughes are both out now. Yeah. So it'll be really interesting who he picks at eight. Does he go for Haskell? He's brought your fave, Don Armand, in. Is he going to give him a shot? There's so many decisions there. I think he could easily pick Owen Farrell to start at 10. And
he's got to do that.
I think that would be it would be good to see that. And I'd also like to see Henry Slade at 13 because I'm a really big fan of Henry Slade. I think if Henry Slade had been fit when Eddie Jones first came in, we'd probably be seeing a very different England team. We probably would never have seen the Ford-Farrell, this axis that's been the base of everything for the last 2 years.
Totally agree with Mockers there, yeah. Farrell at 10, Teo at 12, Slade at 13, that would be my...
Michael, you had the same problem with Mark Herr a long time ago. In 1984, you switched, then you switched back easily. First of all, is it easy to switch between those two positions? And secondly, is Farrell now the man in this time of crisis to go back to 10?
Yes, it is easy to switch. Well, it was back in my day. Whether it is the same at the moment, yes, I think it is. Do I think forward should go? I'm a little bit in disagreement with people here. I just felt that the problem at 10 is a direct relationship to what's going on in front of him. I think if you put the best 10 in the world there behind a pack that's not going forward with slow ball, it's very difficult for them to do anything. I'd probably give that another go. I really would. Although, as you say, Steve, it's it's time to maybe look at something else. This is an opportunity to do that. We know what Ford and Farrell can do there, so maybe it's time to move forward. I just don't think that Ford deserves all the blame for the inactivity of the back line.
Don't some fly halves make a better fist of it when they're on the back foot?
Yeah, that's true.
Then maybe
but that's where Owen Farrell, that's where he's there anyway. So you can do that. It's a bit... He could actually sort of fit in there and do that. Well, you've got two playmakers there. The one change that I would make in the backs, apart from sort of... the ones you've discussed there would be to put Elliot Daly at 15. I think he's totally probably the most talented player and the informed player, even though he's been out with injury. He's the most informed player and the talented player in that team, and I just feel putting him at 15 would be a much better position for him to play. It would get him more touches on the ball, which is always a good thing. Watson, I like. Move him to the wing. That's where I feel he's better.
I totally agree with that.
That would be a positional change.
Daly's a better reader of the game,
But Daly's a superb reader of the game, and frankly, people keep on about this defensive weakness that he's meant to have. I would bring him as close to the action as possible. I'd put him 13. I'd just try him at 13, because I mean, at least you're not taking massive impact in terms of defence there. But Sarah, we're talking about the backs here and sort of blaming the backs and weeding them out. But there's an old adage that unless you go forward up front, it doesn't really matter who you've got there. You can have Michael and Jonathan Davis. Now, Eddie's first promise when he came in his first press conference at Twickenham. One of the senior and best-looking journalists asked him the following question. Are you going to restore the English heritage of forward power? He said, absolutely. Where is the evidence of that? The scrum was fairly weedy, bailed out by the ref, I thought. Line-out was OK. Where was the power and the energy?
My biggest issue with...
It was with Billy Vonipola.
Yes. sitting at home watching TV. I just think they just don't seem to support each other well enough. You had too many isolated runners. That's why France were able to get so much turnover ball. Is their players were just going into contact and there was no one quick enough to support and ruck out the French defenders. And that's why they've really struggled in that area. And why they haven't learnt this. Like, there's just no ability to react and adapt during a game. It's like if it's not happening how they imagined it would, they can't change their plans. And I think that's the biggest concern. Like, Scotland, after the Calcutta Cup, said they never thought they would get as much freedom as Nigel Owens gave them at the breakdown. Barclay and Watson reacted to that and started having much more of a dig around in that area, whereas England just carried on standing off. And they're just too predictable and allowing other teams to take control of the breakdown.
Steve, this thing about we've got to learn about the breakdown. Surely, the modern day, you go out there and you see what the ref's doing and then you react. You don't take 18 months. You do it there and then, surely.
Yeah,
would Sam Warburton be saying, oh, we're going to take 3 months to win at the back?
That's why Sam Warburton's so good, isn't it? Because he is so good at seeing what's going on and reacting to it. I mean, that was a big
And call. Richie McCaw too.
Yeah, exactly.
And David Pocock.
Yeah, exactly. But England haven't got a player like that.
They just haven't got any of them in the squad.
Breakdown wasn't a problem a few months ago either, was it? You know, it wasn't a problem a few months ago.
If you get on the front foot, the breakdown is a lot easier, isn't it?
Yes.
When Billy Vonipola was there at the start of Eddie's reign, he was smashing over the gate. Because Billy Vonipola can make yards from a standing start. There are not many players in the world who can do that. Vonipola can do that. And they worked on that ruck and run principle that Japan used, didn't they? Vonipola got over the gain line quickly. The others came in, smashed people out of the way. Quick ball, Ben Youngs is quite useful.
Then it was also with Billy getting over the game line, it made it easier for the Launchburys and Laws and these other sort of runners that actually
to carry as well.
They
kept
going because the defence is on the back
foot. There isn't a carrier like that, is there? I mean, Laws is probably the only carrier. They're going to miss him, aren't they?
Maka Vunipola was there as well, but was a bit ineffective as well.
I think he's tired, isn't
Hartley he? Hartley as well was a carrier, but they've sort of just lost that. They seem to have lost that impetus. And
so
that
who's
explosion.
Going to carry on Saturday without Laws? That's
Courtney Laws, I don't know what you think, Sarah, but Courtney Laws is always been one of my favourite players. But he has expressed his own problem, that his weight, he can't put enough on.
I had that problem.
Well, Courtney is underweight as far as I'm concerned, and he's a string bean. And I think he's lost something as well. Great player though he is, good lineup. I think he's lost the carrying as well.
Yeah, I remember looking at him when they were playing Wales at Twickenham and thinking, Corey looks really slim.
Slim, yeah.
Like, and you never really associate that with him. He's always been a bit gangly, but you still thought he had the power. But yeah, I definitely think that he's sort of lost that edge. And you remember on the Lions tour, he was the complete opposite. He was making the charges. He was one of the standout players on that tour and was unlucky not to be involved so much. So it was a. It seems strange that this season he's not having the same.
So he's saying that, though, if he'd have been fit, I'd have picked him in the second half for Saturday, and then you'd have had to leave out one of Launchbury or I chose.
The other thing that I make a comment about England, look at England over the last two games against Scotland, against Wales as well, the last three, I actually felt England looked tired. They actually looked tired towards the end of games when they're supposed to be this super fit team and win games in the last 20. They looked tired and almost, should I say it, stale to me. They just sort of... You talk about Laws there, which sort of reminded me a little bit about it. You know, do you think that they might have overtrained a
bit? Well, there's a suspicion, isn't there? I mean, a lot of players have been asked about it. They're not going to admit that, though.
They look tired to me.
I would say, though, against France, though, it was in that last 10 minutes that they actually started to deliver something, but maybe that's because then you had Sinclair and the likes on who were gaining a bit more yardage.
They made a big difference, those subs.
Yeah. They did. I'd say, as well as overtrained, I'd say overcoached. They just looked so totally confused to me. And I think we come to the point, you know, when they played Australia summer of 15?
2016.
That's the last time they played.
They were so good, but they have not remotely approached that, and that is disturbing. Now, we're coming to...
Can I just ask one question about the France game? Do people think England would have played better if they didn't have the pressure of having to score four tries because of the bonus point system?
They'd have to win the game.
They didn't seem to approach it by wanting to score tries. They went for the points, but I just wonder whether that made them more inhibited.
The other thing I'd like to say about England as well, and this is something that I felt that the All Blacks suffer from a little bit as well. When the team gets behind that aren't used to getting behind, when you've won 24 games in a row or something like that, and you think everything's sort of, it'll happen, it'll come, and then panic sets in. And people don't really know what to do because they're not used to that situation. You know, the All Blacks suffer from that, I think. And it's all very well to say, let's get momentum against the All Blacks. That's very hard to do. But when you do, you can see that they're sort of panicking a little bit because they're not in those situations very often and don't know how to react to it.
Isn't that when you need leaders, though?
And that's another thing that I think is very strange because Eddie says he's got these leaders in Hartley and Brown and these sort of people. And they get taken off right at the key moments, like the last 30 minutes, last 25 minutes. That's a strange one.
I'm going to ask in a minute where we think it'll go, but let's just talk about Ireland just briefly. And incidentally, we're talking now about a back row, which I think we've almost sort of agreed on, and that would be someone like, in my opinion, would be Don Armand, Haskell Ait, and Sam Simmons at Openside. You've got Don Armand, who Eddie Jones has not wanted to know, who's been the outstanding player in the... James Haskell's not played number eight for donkey's years. And Sam Simmons, who's all sent up to be a number eight, has had very little experience on the flank, especially open side. And now we're saying that's the best back row. And it might be the best back row. And that's...
But what are the other options? I'd still play Robshaw at six.
I'd play Robshaw at six, Haskell at eight. And then I think that's a better balance.
Well, at least he'll be industrious.
No, but I think you can get away with being industrious at six. I think that's the one position
where
you probably
can. Supposed to be industrious.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
I mean, you could do with him being a better carrier, someone like Kaino.
The other thing is, I mean, we press seem to take a lot of stick when we give England stick, and as if we're anti-English, we want them to lose. it improves the lot of all journalists in Fleet Street if England are going well and suddenly we're not competing with football anymore, which is what we're always doing. So we want to win, we want them to do well, and we want them to entertain. And I would love to see get some big hard forwards, including Armand in my team, and let's go daily somewhere where he can make a difference. Let's keep Watson at fullback. Let's bring Slade in there, and let's at least give someone to get the crowd off their feet and get them back on side. Because if you'd been in the bar with us, Sarah, on Sunday morning early, the people were not happy, were they?
The thing I'd say about that as well is Ireland can be opened up, can't they?
Yeah, I mean, especially out wide, I think.
I mean, Wales had no possession and nearly snuck that game. Yeah. Same with Scotland. Scotland opened them up a lot. But whether England can play in that manner is another question altogether. But they definitely can be opened up, Ireland.
They can. Look, anyone can lose away from home. Almost everyone, apart from, as Michael said, Ireland and France have lost away from home. I just think they're big and hard, and I don't think they'll react badly to wanting the Grand Slam. I think they're big and hard, and England have got it all to do. When you say Furlong, you compare his input into a game with, say, Cole. Big man, dominates the scrum. He's not elegant in the loose, but he gets about the field. And with Sexton there, Ringrose with the possibility of maybe not in defence, but in attack. Carney, if he's fit, has come back, played really well.
Yeah,
I think it would take an unbelievably bad effort by Ireland to lose the game, but you never know.
I agree with all that, and England were woeful on Saturday in Paris. Yeah. But Twickenham is a hard place to win, isn't it?
For
a side going there. England will raise their game. They won't want Ireland to win that Grand Slam, especially after what Ireland did to England last year.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Let's just go along. Mike, do you see it only going one way or tight or what? Is there anything England could do technically, tactically, from the heart to change it around?
I actually think Ireland will win. I thought that their celebrations seemed to be reasonably subdued last weekend, and they've got a job to do. They want to win this Grand Slam and beating England and doing so. I just think that they're a team that's in more confidence mode than, say, England, which is in more crisis mode.
Sarah, any luck, any chance for England at all?
Yeah, I definitely think there's a chance. I think it'll be tight, but I agree with Michael. I think Ireland will win. I think there's... This Ireland team may have won championships, but very, very few of them have won a Grand Slam. I think Carney and Best, are they the two that were involved in 2009? Sexton spoken about how he was part of it, but didn't feel like he was a key member of the team. This is the real target for them, and I think the Ireland need a Grand Slam to keep pushing forward. I think they've won championships, they've beaten New Zealand. This would be like another step on that road to 2019.
Steve, you want a few changes to lift the spirits, do you think? But do you think England have got a good chance?
Yeah, I'd like to make this prediction having seen the England team, because I think that's going
to
be a big difference. I think Ireland probably will win, but I wouldn't be absolutely shocked if England did win. I still go back to that Twickenham factor.
This is The Ruck. We'll be back soon.
Literally, This is The Ruck. We'll be back after this.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Welcome back, everybody. We're going to move straight on now to the Welsh. Put away Italy in a certain style. Steve, you thought, as you said in the Times this morning, possibly not spectacular, but with a much changed side, competent.
Yeah, I think there'll be highly satisfied actually with that performance, Wales. They made 10 changes. You could see the way they're trying to play again. You know, they are looking to play with a lot more ambition. Fair play to Warren Gatland. He's quite gutsy in a way, some of those decisions he made, playing James Davis and Tipperick in the back row. I mean, they played two open sides before, but when one of them, Sam Warburton, is slightly different because he can play six, can't he? Tipperick and James Davis are two genuine open sides. I suppose there was a little bit of a worry that Italy might have got to them up front, but it helps getting two tries in the first 5 minutes, which gives you a bit of a buffer. But
is James Davis the player he's cracked up to be in many quarters?
It's hard to say after one game, isn't it? Mm. I thought he did okay yesterday. He wasn't outstanding, was he? He did some good things. He got a turnover early on, which Wales got a penalty from and scored. He made a couple of glaring errors, and there was a stupid penalty for a late challenge, wasn't there? And he dropped the ball he shouldn't have dropped, really. But I think it was okay. But Wales have just got such riches in that position, haven't they?
We'll just come to Michael in a minute about Italy. But Sarah, who came through for Wales who we didn't know about, or who played really well who's not been playing too well?
Well, I'll just give my opinion. This isn't, we obviously know about him, but I think George North's now getting back to his best.
Okay. Yeah.
Lions tour, it was a horrible sight to see him. Yeah. He looked tentative. He didn't back himself when he went into contact. He looked really sort of, it was just going in within himself. He didn't have any confidence, whereas now he's attacking the gain line. He doesn't mind taking the contact, even if it's getting stuck in. Didn't he win a turnover yesterday? Yeah. He's like, obviously he had all those problems with concussion, and I think now we're seeing him come back.
I mean, he looked good when he came off the bench against England and Ireland, so you can see that sort of progression. The one person I'll mention is Hadley Parks.
Yeah.
Fair point.
I think he's turning into a proper international inside centre.
As a 12?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he just doesn't make mistakes, doesn't he? He really looks at home in the international game. So I think Wales have found their 12 there. Whether he should be playing is a different matter, but I think they found their 12 there, definitely. Yeah.
Michael, just a word on Wales from you, and also your thoughts on, obviously Italy still close to your heart in your rugby career. In fact, no matter about your sons, if you wanted to play now, you'd probably get back in as well. But Wales, did they impress you? And Italy, are they still marking time, running on the spot?
Just to answer the Wales question first, I actually think Wales are in a pretty good place at the moment. I actually think they should have beaten England. They had all the ball in the second half. Just a little bit more of nous and experience may have got them across the line, and belief may have got them across the line there. But there's some good players coming through. I also like the sort of environment that Gatland's provided there that gives people a chance to come and have a go. And when they do, they seem to be having a license to actually play their game.
Sarah, Mike, it is developing the sense that this season, however bad or good Wales have been, we all know there could be seven Lions back next season, good ones, not just...
The thing, all the doom and gloom before this tournament was, they've got eight Lions out, the injury list is horrendous. But actually, they've probably, at the end of this tournament, they could be in the best position because they have now got so much depth. They could probably pick three different back rows and they'd still be decent. Like, the selection for this weekend is going to be really tough.
You're absolutely right. And you look at fly half, which is a very, very important position. They've got three fly halves they've used through this tournament.
Yeah, and all offer something a little bit different.
Yeah, and I thought Amstrom was very good yesterday when he played. And
Do you think they'll pick him next week, Amstrom? Rather than bigger for a
quite
big physical game?
I'm just about to disagree with my distinguished fly half background with one of the great fly halves.
I
do like him, but Dan Biggar for me is a force of nature. In the Six Nations, in all the sound and fury, I'd always have him. I thought on the Lions tour, in a sometimes dodgy midweek team, he was absolutely brilliant.
Oh, no, I agree with that.
He's a great competitor.
If they're all available, he's the number one Welsh fly half. I'm not disagreeing. I'm just saying that your question was whether he'll pick Anscombe. Yeah. It depends what Warren Gatland wants to do in that sense.
Let's pick the Welsh back row for next weekend then, as Mocker's
God.
Well, Faletau's got to be number eight.
That's the obvious one.
And I think Navidi deserves to come back in at seven.
Okay.
Because I just think he's had a really good tournament and was unlucky not to play.
Steve, your back row?
Hey, you haven't let me pick a six
yet. Sorry.
Yesterday I actually had a very interesting conversation with Andy Robinson, and he would pick Tipperich at six. He thinks he can play that position really well. But I think that would be really harsh on Shingler, to be
I wouldn't do that against a
Tybrick would be industrious.
No, he'd struggle. I'd go Shingler at six, but probably only because Ross Moriarty, I don't think Ross Moriarty is fully fit. He hasn't been fully fit. If he was fully fit, I'd reckon I might play him at six. So I'd have Shingler six, Falato eight, and then it is a tricky choice between Navidi or Tybrick at seven.
Just going, Steve, briefly to a wider issue. Last week he did an excellent piece on with Sam Warburton, who really reached deep inside himself, and indeed is the man that everyone he's the man everyone thinks he could be, and he is.
Yeah.
Sam was taken aback by the severity of his own injuries, taken aback by the severity of the game. And also applauded the fact that Maro Itoje was injured because it's the only way he gets a rest.
Yeah.
From a nice guy and a wise man like that, isn't it amazing that no one reacts to it in officialdom? No one ever says, look, we look at the fixtures or anything like that.
Well, you'd hope they'd read that article, even though it was written by me. he was talking about the length of the season as well, wasn't he, Sam, about how you just cannot extend it.
Yeah.
He said anybody making that decision has never played a game of professional rugby in their lives, which is so true, isn't it?
But surely we can't say we cannot extend it. It's got to be chopped. But congratulations.
I mean, it was a good point, wasn't it, he made, that a lot of the time these days, the only time you do get an extended rest
is
when you get injured. And Sam's lucky. I mean, he's got a year out of the game. I think the big thing to take out of that was it's good to hear that he does want to play again, because I think he's had some quite dark days there before
Absolutely.
Christmas. He had a neck operation and a knee operation. I think there was probably a time when he thought that might be it.
I was very impressed with that article and what Sam had to say there. That was a relatively brave thing to say.
He was very honest with
him. And also, I watched him on TV yesterday for the Italian game, and I was really impressed with the way he spoke and what he said and how he and the things he commented. It was just very impressive, man.
I mean, that's why the governing bodies should be listening to what. He's captain of the Lions twice, isn't he? But he's got a bit of a statesmanlike appearance to him these days. So they should be listening to him.
I say two things. Everyone says, we got leaders. Well, that's a leader.
Yeah.
And secondly, I know how rattled you when Slotty won that Rugby Writer of the Year, and I know that was your first. that was the first part of your plan to take over the crown. I mean, I wouldn't say you were bitter, but you took it badly, and I think that was an excellent start. Slotty would be coming back in a day or two. Slotty didn't want that piece to go in, he told me. Sarah, can we just go on to France? I think the three of you, well, at least two of you, when we were talking before, and said actually England didn't really have to beat very much, but I thought France were much improved. Two of their big forwards were better. And I thought they had some clue behind the scrum. I thought even Tran Duc played quite well. But no? Are they still bad?
I just don't think they were... I don't think they were amazing. I thought it was a game between two... Like, lacking in quality by two average sides, really.
Michael, did you not see anything more
I was just going to say, I think Kamara was very good at seven. Brilliant. I think he's a really good player. And I really you didn't rate him at all in your match report, but Remy Grosso I've probably pronounced that really badly.
Yeah.
But on the wing, I think, is a really real shining light for them. And I think he seems to get stuck in quite a lot, has a high work rate. So interesting to see how he comes through.
But they're not the French of old, as we love them.
Were better than the last time they played, which was, I must admit, wouldn't be hard. But they seem to be much more motivated, enthused, etc. And that grew throughout the game. Now, whether that was the chance to kick England, I think that was very much part of that. And as they sort of got more confidence throughout the game, I think they grew. But they looked a pretty limited outfit to me. There was some brilliant individual stuff that went on and all that sort of thing. And I don't think they're a great team. But
I dread to think what the scorelines will be from their summer tour to New Zealand.
Oh, God knows.
Especially when you consider they probably won't even be able to take all their players.
I thought they were a little bit better, but I didn't think they were that good. That was a low quality test match.
With Alan Wynne-Jones back for Wales and all their best forwards, do you think the Wales will be too good for them?
Yeah, I think Wales probably will win. They've got a good record against France recently, especially in Cardiff. I mean, Wales will have to change their side, but they'll have both props back probably, won't they? Rob Evans and Sampson Lee, Alan Wynne-Jones come back.
But the French are a pretty emotional sort of bunch, and that's what I'm saying during that game. You know, that
they actually grew in that game to, oh, look, we can win this, let's go. And they tried really hard to lose it at the end with Boxies kicking it
that was unbelievable,
into the centre field.
Unbelievable.
But I think a rejuvenated, sort of confident French side can be a dangerous side. I still think Wales will win, but yeah. I wouldn't be taking them very lightly, as I know
Wales win. They finish second in the table. I mean, they'll be very happy with that.
Oh, we'd be delighted. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Italy, I mean, look, very disappointing. You know, the game was over after 5 minutes. They were 14 points down due to solely two almost inexcusable errors, just silly schoolboy errors. And that's Italy's problem. They're competitive for large parts of the game. And then a silly defensive error or mistake with the ball in hand. And that then costs them points. And then the last 20 minutes, they always tend to fade because they just don't have the depth of other teams. Having said that I do think Zebre and Treviso this year have played better. Probably haven't got the results they sort of wanted. Their under-20s is coming along well, but it's still a long-term fix there for me.
So they made so many errors, you see.
Oh, it's just so frustrating. Must be a nightmare to coach.
Sure.
I like the fullback, though.
Minozzi. Yeah.
Minozzi. Looks great
and
pace.
And Negri as well. Negri. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to move on now to the other Six Nations. Which had its own climax on Saturday evening. Very difficult to follow it because it wasn't shown on any French TV we could find, Sarah. But at the end of what was an amazingly exciting game with Nipentuck and the Leeds changing hands in front of 17,000 people at Grenoble, sadly for English fans, they were beaten in the last act, almost the last act.
Katie Daly-McLean scored a penalty just, I think it was like the 76th minute, but then Jesse Tremoulet, again, probably bad for French pronunciation, scored in the final minute try. So France won 18-17. So that was basically the Grand Slam decider. They were the only two unbeaten teams in the tournament. So France now go to Wales and will probably wrap up a Grand Slam on Friday night. England play Ireland in Coventry and will probably finish second. But they're also, so firstly, great crowd there, 17,440, which I think is an international record for a women's game. Quinn's also had a UK club record for their game against Richmond, which was just under 5,000, I think. Mm. Whether they would have got more if they'd played it not on a Six Nations weekend, I don't know, but they would have at least had their internationals.
Sarah, I think you've been a little bit kind there. What marketing person is going to put on a big game on the same day as two internationals on the television? But carry on, it was a good crowd. Yeah.
But, two other really good results yesterday just for the tournament as a whole. Italy beat Wales 22-15 at the Principality Stadium. And Scotland beat Ireland 15-12. Chloe Rolley, who's the sort of star fullback for Scotland, really impressed there. So
that was an absolutely magnificent win because Scotland, their record had hardly beat anyone. And now they've beaten
away. Last year they had a really good season. Like in recent years, they've always been hammered. They've really struggled. But they've put a lot more focus on that now. They've got four professional players, I think, who play out in France, including Chloe Rolley, Jade Concall, Lisa Thompson. And so that's helped. And they've got Shade Munro there, who's a really experienced coach. So they've sort of put a lot more focus on the women's game. I think the fact they missed out on the World Cup last year has really sort of driven this push to make sure they're maintaining standards. They beat Wales last year, and now they've beaten Ireland this year. So it's a massive win for them.
The controversial side of this, of course, is that England and France are up for the Grand Slam, and they should. One of them should win it every year, but England, with all their investment, should win it, and yet they've just lost it with a huge number of players away at the sevens. It's happened again.
I don't think that necessarily having any of the sevens players in would have made that much difference. France
only
really
had to make one
team.
Score difference.
Yeah, but I just think that's a really great competitive game. I don't know whether if you had Emily Scarrett in there, that would have meant that they would have won that fixture. There's some really good, like Ellie Kildon at fullback, 18. She's studying her A-levels. She's been phenomenal in this tournament, like a real breakout star. So I don't think just throwing in a couple more of the sevens players would have meant they would have won that game automatically. That would have been just as competitive a fixture.
So Emily Scarrett wouldn't have made any difference. The greatest player that this game's ever seen.
I'm saying it wouldn't have made a difference to the result. I don't know if it would have made a difference to the result. They might still have lost.
I would have been okay, but surely you've got to give yourself the best chance you possibly can.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily
17,000,
particularly that there aren't any sevens events. There's no World Series leg on at the moment. They had one in January in Sydney, and then there isn't one until the end of April. So why people can't play both, I'm not sure.
Two just very quick geographical things. Australia, Mike, they're finally getting the 15s game together there?
Yes. There's been a Super W tournament that's being played. Started last weekend. Queensland played New South Wales. Western Australia played, I think it was the Rebels team from Melbourne. So, yeah, it's really getting into shape. Good sponsor as well, Build Corp, sponsoring that tournament.
Build Corp actually pulled out of sponsoring the national championship.
Correct.
Because the ARU hadn't delivered on their promise to create a 15s tournament for the women. Mm. So it's actually monetary pressure that's led to that happening.
Really pleased with that, because whenever I've seen the Aussie 15s girls team recently, they've been the forwards look like overweight and undertrained because they've only just come into the system. And I think that's wrong. I think 15s has got to be. And also in New Zealand now, they have their own system with a certain amount of money available to them.
Yeah, I haven't read enough about this today, but I just had an email saying that they're giving out 30 contracts to the Black Ferns. I doubt it will be that they'll be full time, but it's obviously remuneration for training, travel, all those sort of things which before they wouldn't have had. So it's great to see those countries do that. You just hope more will do it.
Okay, and thank you very much. We'll definitely be coming back to that. But France champs this year. And the big headline from today's podcast is Sarah Savage's superstar Scarrett.
Oh my God.
The greatest player ever, who wouldn't have made a...
Oh, my God, twisting. That is a sensationalist headline.
I'm going to ring her now. I said, Emily, Sarah said you wouldn't have made a ha'porth of difference.
I just said it wouldn't necessarily have made a difference to the result.
Backtrack.
Thanks, guys. Let me give the last word to Sarah. Sarah, you were on Scrum 5 last night, but in a very, very, very serious, they've BBC Wales have lost a contract to show the Pro 14 next year. Now, the BBC Wales, and also it's going to affect other regions, but the BBC Wales programs, Friday nights, Sundays, have become a real big part of the calendar.
This is a huge thing.
And it is a huge thing because there's a channel which, to be perfectly honest, I haven't heard of in Ireland. Apparently has very few subscribers anywhere.
The old Satanta.
It's funded by the same guy, I think, who had Satanta. And apparently, I was told yesterday, you can't get it if you have BT. You have to have a Sky or Virgin contract.
But also you have to pay for it in Wales.
Yes, you have to pay for it. So it's just another blow for supporters, really, to want to watch rugby, because they're going to have to pay another subscription deal. So it was actually looking better because all the European rugby was going to BT next season in that it would just be one channel. But now people will still have to pay another channel if they want to watch any Pro 14.
The only hope is that S4C, the Welsh language channel, there's still a chance they may get some of the some of the rights, so that there may be some on terrestrial TV. But I mean, if that doesn't work out, I mean, it'll be an absolute calamity for Welsh rugby.
And doesn't say much for the tournament, really, if no one wants to come and take it all on.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose there's an argument that maybe if people can't watch on TV, they might actually turn up to some of the games.
I would say. People have moaned about crowds in Welsh rugby for ages, and actually the fact that everything is on free-to-air does mean you can sit at home on a Friday night rather than go to the Arms Park. It probably won't make the same difference.
Oh, maybe, if the TV are not showing it, then they'll have the kick-off times when people want to go along and watch it at 3 o'clock on the Saturday. And makes our deadlines a lot easier as well.
The other TV people will probably dictate.
Oh, they will, Mike, Sky's input's gone way down in terms of rugby. The Pro 14's not going to be on terrestrial next year. Is there just the first signs of the rugby boom slowing down now?
Well, definitely from a Sky point of view, it appears to be that. It's quite sad, you know, with Sky for many, many years was a great product and did a lot to improve the way rugby was broadcast and watched and consumed. There seems to be, we haven't got a lot of content from the next few years. Premiership's gone, European Cup's gone, Pro 14's gone. You know, it's sad, really, that the rugby department seems to be dwindling away.
Okay, I knew we'd find it difficult to find topics this morning. just remember, everybody, first of all, thanks for downloading. Thanks for listening to us. Please react to us and we will react back to you. And remember, to listen to The Ruck, you don't need a dish. Well, you can eat off a dish while you're listening to it. You don't need a dish. You don't need to pay. The Ruck is free. It's weekly, long into the future. We're not subject to trends, and we'll be with you through the end of this Six Nations and for many more to come. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Off Air, the podcast. With Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
Keep your cheese in the sink.
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh,
no.
So
yes. How would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.